Good afternoon, good people, and welcome back to Washington Theological Union. It is Saturday, October 23rd, and we are very honored to have Deacon Jack Sullivan to come to address, to speak to us from his heart, to tell us the experience that he had with Cardinal Newman. We won't say much more there. My joy is to have gotten to know Jack and his wife, Carol. They hosted me towards the end of August and told me about their wonderful family, their three children, Brian and Jessica and Jennifer, and how excited they were to prepare to go to England for the beatification. And if you know Jack's wife, Carol, she is not afraid to let you know what she's thinking. Isn't that right, Jack? That was my experience constantly in that wonderful visit we had. And then I'll let Jack tell you how she felt when she walked up to the feet of the Holy Father. So without further ado, I introduce Jack, Deacon Jack Sullivan, who has spent a career in the legal field. Come up, Jack. 14 years as a trial lawyer and 30 years as a magistrate. So now we'll see a little different side of him, not the trial lawyer or the magistrate. Jack.
Thank you so much. Let me extend my personal thanks and gratitude to Father Ed for inviting me to this beautiful city and Theological Union, Washington Theological Union, and most especially for speaking to all of you. My first reaction, and I said this to Father Ed, this is more of a retreat for me than it is a intellectual exercise or a symposium discussing philosophical and theological truths of Scotus and Newman. There's much more meaning than that for me, and I'm so grateful. Before I begin, Father John, that experience I had, I was a student at Stonehill. As we were walking up to the Holy Father, Carol from the front row and me from the sanctuary area, we met, and as we walked up the steps to the Holy Father, Carol was holding the relic of Newman, and she leaned over to me and said, "Jack, I can't talk, I can't talk." I said, "That's unusual." You know where you stand with Carol. She's been, a beautiful compliment to me, helping me to keep my feet on the ground. I'm so grateful to her. As a subject, I chose redemptive suffering. It's far different from what you've heard the last few days. And hopefully, I will be applying, perhaps you could see Newman in my actual experiences and perhaps appreciate him all the more. He was no stranger to suffering. As a matter of fact, some of his greatest insights came as the result of his wrestling and with problems and difficulties and challenges. And without these challenges, perhaps he would have never thought of them. So there's a reason for suffering. And also the world today, especially today, these days, is a world that is suffering as it is distancing itself from its sovereign love. So I thought to speak about this issue, not only about Newman, but how it affects and is reflected in my experience. And I may begin by saying that we cannot grow in faith unless we first practice it amidst anguish and sorrows. None of us living in this world can escape the prospect of sorrows and afflictions, for they are indeed an essential part of our life's experiences. But if we persevere in faith amidst these sorrows and afflictions, always trusting, and this was important to Newman, always trusting in God's loving providence, then some greater good will always result, some higher purpose will always be achieved. And we see this mystery of redemptive suffering most vividly portrayed in the life of Christ. His life was marked by a life of betrayal, suffering, and death. The true image of the man who brought us forgiveness and redemption. Indeed, life was not the man who worked wonders and miracles. On the contrary, it was the man of sorrows, the man of the cross. And indeed, the fulfillment of Christ's messianic mission could only come from the perspective of the cross. And his holy cross truly represents the fulfillment, tangible fulfillment of his inexhaustible love for us. And surely the cross is a fitting emblem of our faith. We also see this mystery of redemptive suffering faithfully born in the motherhood of our church. And our holy and enduring church lives on and is constantly renewed in a very special way by those called by God as his servants to inspire and revitalize her. One such a person called for this purpose was Blessed John Henry Cardinal Newman. And he seized upon every opportunity to exercise, to practice his faith, always trusting in God's loving providence, especially during times of persistent sorrows and difficulties. So many people in Newman's time, indeed so many of us today, would prefer to enter into religious glory without any cost or pain, without any trials or sorrows, without self-denial and self-sacrifice. With this in mind, Cardinal Newman once wrote, "True religion has two sides to it, a beautiful side and a severe side. And we all will surely stray from the narrow path that leads to life if we indulge ourselves in what is beautiful while casting aside what is severe." Commenting further on this issue, Cardinal Newman wrote, "Religion is not meant to make an earthly person feel good," how important is that today, "or even secure in his station in life. On the contrary, true religion is to touch our hearts and our souls, to incline us to seek to do the will of God, and it promises to transform us into Christ's own image, but most often at the expense of worldly suffering and poverty." In Sermon 16 of his parochial and plain sermons, he assures us that our compassionate Father will always act in our best interest and for our greater good, especially when our hearts are immersed in sorrows. Sorrows are opportunities, and I try to emphasize this wherever I speak, opportunities for grace, opportunities to participate in Christ's own mission for the redemption of mankind, for the forgiveness of sins. Cardinal Newman once said, The spirits of the just are made perfect through suffering and are encouraged to follow Christ. And with this in mind, Cardinal Newman wrote his celebrated poem. Lead me on, kindly light of truth, amidst the encircling gloom. I ask not to see the distant scene. One step is enough for me. And so Cardinal Newman surrendered his will to follow that kindly light of truth, but frequently at great cost to himself. I often marvel at the man who, in a worldly, borrowing from a worldly expression, was at the top of his game, one of the most celebrated priests of the Anglican Communion. And knowing how affiliated the church was with the state, to give all that up and suffer such humiliation and condescension simply to follow that kindly light of truth. And so often our trials and our sorrows, indeed the severe side of our religion, which so distress us in this present moment, do ultimately have lasting significance for some greater good, or the realization of some higher purpose, surely the beautiful side of religion. In fact, we cannot enjoy the beautiful side without persevering through what is severe. And in our perseverance, we begin to discern God's Spirit guiding us, prompting us, nudging us to follow His kindly light of truth along the narrow path He has chosen for each one of us. And so it was with me on June 6th of the year 2000, when I began a rather wondrous and mysterious journey from horrific pain and suffering to the unfathomable reaches of the communion of saints, all by means of a simple prayer uttered from the lips of a simple man. I awoke that morning to excruciating pain in both my legs. My wife rushed me to a local hospital, and the physician in the ER ordered a CAT scan of my back, of all things. I thought I might have had an embolism, but how could I have an embolism in both legs? And the CAT scan revealed a rather serious problem, a succession of lumbar discs and vertebrae deformities, about five of them, all protruding inwards with the disc and literally squeezing the life out of my spinal cord. Interestingly enough, there was nothing traumatic that I could point to that would lead me to this medical condition. And this protrusion not only was squeezing the spinal cord, but the femoral nerves, which explains the pain in my legs. He suggested that I seek immediate help from one of the spinal specialists in Boston, because it appeared likely that my lower functions would soon shut down, resulting in permanent paralysis. Instead of a spine this size, it was reduced to almost the circumference of a kernel of corn. And that condition was very vulnerable, because with a bone in that area, it could easily be severed. But there was a problem getting appointments with these specialists, these surgeons, that were booked for months and months. And as time went on, I became increasingly gripped with tension and anxiety because I was also scheduled to begin my third year of studies in my diaconate formation program for the Archdiocese of Boston, which was scheduled to begin that particular year on September 5th of the year 2000. I had just completed my second year of formation of a four-year program leading to my ordination as a permanent deacon. It was a beautiful program. And I had my heart set on returning to classes. In mid-July of the year 2000, I met with the chief of spinal surgery at one of the major hospitals in Boston. And after reviewing the films, the CAT scan, MRI, and he ordered a myelogram, he said, without question, yours is the worst back I've seen in 17 years of performing spinal surgery. And he warned me that I should forget about my plans to return to classes because I needed immediate surgery. Otherwise, I would very likely be paralyzed. And because of this high risk of paralysis, at that very time, he scheduled me for surgery for September 12th of the year 2000, the same time I was scheduled to return to classes. And I returned home after this tragic news, demoralized, distraught. And I thought I'd turn on the television in my family room to get my mind off my troubles. And I turned the channel to the EWTN network that I've often watched, and maybe with some consolation. And the program, that particular moment, was just beginning, it featured Father J. John McCloskey interviewing Father Ian Carr, a Newman scholar from England, from Oxford. And they were talking about Newman's difficult life, the crisis he experienced in his vocation, as well as the ongoing efforts at Newman's beatification. And interestingly enough, at the end of the program, the network flashed on the screen, if you receive any divine favors after praying to Cardinal Newman, please contact the postulative for Newman's cause of canonization, the Oratory, Birmingham, England. In view of this request, I naturally prayed to Cardinal Newman with all my heart. Please, Cardinal Newman, help me to walk so that I could return to classes and be ordained. This was the exact prayer I made. I didn't pray for complete healing. I thought perhaps that was too much to ask for. Merely to grant me some small favor, some favor that was most urgent at the time in my mind, and that was to return to classes. That somehow, I would be enabled to do that. Then I went to bed, and I slept comfortably that night, first time in months. You see, when I walked, if I may demonstrate, I had to walk in this fashion. Holding my right arm, holding on to my knee for support. following morning, I woke up virtually pain-free. I couldn't believe it. I could walk upright. I could stand upright when I got out of bed. There was no pain in the back of my legs. There was no pain at all. Whereas for months, I was doubled over, as I demonstrated. And the pain was excruciating, and it was constant. But the reality was, even though I was pain-free, I was still scheduled for surgery at the time my classes were to begin. And because of these inconsistent medical realities and the same advice given me to another by another surgeon, I consulted Dr. Robert Banco, one of the most foremost spinal surgeons, not only in Boston, but also in the United States. He was chief of spinal surgery at the New England Baptist Hospital, which is primarily engaged in orthopedics. And he examined me, noting that I could walk upright. I had strength in my legs. I put me on the table and, you know, can you lift your leg? And I lifted it without any problem under pressure. I was completely pain-free. No symptoms whatsoever. Then he looked at the myelogram and the MRI, noting that my physical condition hadn't changed at all. And he was totally mystified, admitting that something uniquely remarkable was happening. What it was, he couldn't fathom. And as the result, he stated to me, "Jack, I really can't recommend that you undergo spinal surgery if you have no symptoms such as pain or disfiguration. Why don't you cancel the surgery and return to classes? I'll stay with your case. And the moment you experience any, even tingling feeling in your lower legs or feet, come to me and I'll perform the surgery immediately." He said, "I'll stay with your case because this condition can't last for very long." Indeed, it lasted for 9 months. I went through my first semester of my third year, a very busy semester, and into my second semester. And interestingly enough, the day after my last class, in April of 2001, the pain returned in all of its fury. But remarkably, I had just completed my third year when it seemed medically impossible that I could do so. Dr. Banco later remarked that there was no scientific or medical reason why I should be pain-free for such a extensive period of time, because the disfigurement in my spinal cord had not changed at all. And I suppose this is akin to Newman's poem, "I ask not to see the distant seen. One step is enough for me." But now With the return of the intense pain, I face the prospect, the real prospect of surgery. Dr. Banco was booked up and through mid-October of 2001. But remarkably, he had an opening later on and called me Jack, how about August 9th? I said, fantastic. The sooner the better, of course. The surgery was more difficult than anticipated. As when he went in, it was quite apparent that there would be lasting problems. You see, my dura mater, that is the tissue, very elastic and strong, durable. But in my particular case, it was all torn to pieces. And it had probably been that way for several months. And the dura mater houses the spinal fluids that protect the spinal cord. After the surgery, I was told that the period of recovery would be extended, not for weeks, but perhaps for months. Matter of fact, the first 3 days after the surgery, I had to lay on my side, motionless, my left side, to permit the dura mater to start healing. The pain was devastating. It seemed even morphine didn't help me. And after 5 or 6 days, very real prospect of my not being able to return to classes came to me. And I had to get out of my hospital bed and at least attempt to walk. I had to at least try. The pain was so agonizing that it took perhaps 10 minutes to squeeze to the side of my bed. And with the nurse's help, to guide my feet to the floor. But I couldn't stand up. I had to lean on the bed in this fashion for support. And I realized how helpless and hopeless my situation was. There's no way I could walk, not even with a walker. And it was again this severe moment, this moment of desolation, that led me to ask for help. And at that moment, I said the same prayer I did a year before, at or about almost the same time, and under the same circumstances. Please, Cardinal Newman, help me to walk so that I can return to classes and be ordained. And then something remarkable happened. Right at that moment, I had a tremendous sensation of intense heat, as if I were next to a blast furnace, and a tingling feeling all over my body, which was very strong, and they lasted for a long time. And I also felt an incredible sense of peace and joy, as well as confidence, that finally I could walk. And when this occurrence subsided, I realized I was standing upright. Whereas before, all I can remember was leaning on the bed in agony. And during these precious moments, I was totally captivated, totally consumed by God's love and protection. I had no understanding what was going on around me. I can't remember any images I was just taken in this state and enjoying it. And that's all that mattered. But I realized at this point, when this experience subsided, that I could walk and I couldn't for months. I could walk upright. I could walk with strength in my back and my legs. And interestingly and coincidentally enough, the healing took place on August 15th, Feast of Our Lady's Assumption. It seems that my healing became remarkably and unexplainably accelerated in one precious moment, rather than the months that I was told that it would take. I was discharged that same day, and to everyone's amazement, I returned to classes on time. Matter of fact, within days after I returned home, I was walking about a mile every day without any pain whatsoever. Mr. Cornwell has written a few pages describing his analysis of my healing. Father Ed asked me to challenge what he said, and I said that wouldn't be necessary. Just the facts themselves, the truth itself, would be all the explanation I needed. Dr. Banco, in a recent filmed interview, was asked a question by some BBC reporters parroting what Mr. Cornwell had said. And he told the reporters, "The spine is usually the size of a quarter." And I'm quoting his remarks. "But in Jack's case, it was compressed to the circumference of a pea. He should have been paralyzed long before. And after the surgery, it would normally take months for the compressed nerves in his spinal cord to decompress to the normal size. And with excruciating pain and severe headaches, he had none." He further remarked that recovery from spinal surgery ranges from weeks to months, naturally depending upon its severity. "Jack's condition was the worst I'd ever seen, and surgically the most difficult. But in Jack's case, you see," and he emphasized this, "there was no period of recovery whatsoever. You see, after his prayer to Cardinal Newman, his condition was as if he never had a back problem, or even surgery for that matter. There is absolutely no medical or scientific explanation for what happened to Jack. It was truly a miracle. In all my years before Jack's surgery or since, I've never seen anything like it. 1 year later, on September 14th, 2002, the feast day of the Triumph of the Cross, actually, my class was to be ordained the week before, but the cardinal was detained in Rome, so it was put back a week, and it just happened to be on September 14th, 2002. On that day, I was ordained a permanent deacon in the Archdiocese of Boston at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross. And coincidentally, without knowing the date of my ordination, the postulator for Newman's cause notified me on that very same day, that afternoon, as a matter of fact, via email, that the Fathers of the Birmingham Oratory had formally voted to initiate the process of Cardinal Newman's beatification and to take my case to Rome. The question I have is, was this notification a providential sign from God and Cardinal Newman, that my prayer to Cardinal Newman was miraculously answered? I don't know. I never will know. All I know is that it was a beautiful sign, affirming not only that my remarkable healing came from God at Cardinal Newman's intercession, as it was immediate, but also through my suffering, some greater good, some higher purpose might be achieved, that Cardinal Newman might soon be counted as one of the blessed in heaven. God bless you all. I have a relic of Cardinal Newman, the only other relic outside the oratory, and it was sent to me a year before the exhumation, as I was requested to conduct a healing service from a young man that was brain dead as the result of a tragic automobile accident. And I called the postulator, gee, could I borrow some of that hair you spoke about in that envelope? And he sent me a clump. And then in the letter said, keep it. So I thought I'd bring it with me. And perhaps Father would be willing to bless you all with it. One other thing. I have a letter here from a woman who saw me on the Raymond Arroyo show on September 2nd, in which I described my healing. And she was one of the two callers to call in. They asked me to pray for her daughter, who had RSD, reflex symptomatic dystrophy syndrome, RSDS, also known as complex regional pain syndrome, CRPS. And she described this condition as perhaps the most painful of all diseases on the schedule of pain, which perhaps the most serious is range is the 40. Cancer is probably listed as 27, 29. And this particular disease is ranked number 35. She said that the pain is, let me describe the condition. It's a deterioration of all of the flesh and the bone in the feet. And it works its way up through the legs. Fortunately enough, it's quite rare. And this young lady for the past 2 years has had to soak her feet in ice water. She's been confined to a hospital for 2 years. And she had been on a regimen of morphine for that period. They haven't done that much research about the disease simply because most of those that are afflicted commit suicide. And Pat asked me to pray for her daughter, Debbie, to Cardinal Newman. Of course, I did, repeatedly. I asked Raymond at the end of the program, do you have her number on the computer? He said, yes. The day after I returned to Boston, I called Pat to get more details and to assure her that I would continue to pray for her daughter. And I said that my wife and I and family are leaving for England in a week. And I will pray for Debbie at the Beatification Mass, especially when I approach the Holy Father. And to remind me of that fact, I put a card with Debbie's name on it in my pocket underneath my vestments. Last Tuesday evening, Pat called me. It's all excited, just so joyful. It seems that they watched the Beatification Mass together. And toward the end of the Mass, the pain suddenly stopped. And there was immediate healing. There were deep wounds almost immediate healing. And new skin since that time has developed underneath the afflicted surface, so that the doctors are confident that this disease has been arrested. There's no cure for it. You can imagine how this woman described this event to me and what my reaction was. And I told her to write the postulator and the Archbishop Longley of Birmingham. Isn't a wonderful thing confirming what the Holy Father did for Cardinal Newman, that this might occur, you know, at the celebration of his beatification. And I think they'll take it seriously. And as I say, this is the letter I have. And Patricia has sent this copies of it on. So this is Newman's time. This is Newman's time. And a man of great affection. And at a time in our culture and our history when that heart is so desperately needed. So thank you so much. God bless you all.
Time for the break. At 3:00 we'll return. Thank you.
You want to bless?